going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, guys, we got the draft in 12 hours and 17 minutes. So Mel's final mock draft, Mel Kiper, he's got the Eagles taking Jahad Campbell. Matt Miller from ESPN, he's got the Eagles taking Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan. Todd McShay's final mock draft, he's got the Eagles taking what's considered the third tight end in the draft, Mason Taylor, tight end from LSU. We got Peter Schrager, what he's hearing mock draft. He's got the Eagles taking the cornerback Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky. Obviously, that would be like, whoa, let's load up on this position and lock it in for years until you have to pay a corner. So, no consensus. Honest to God, there's probably anywhere between 20 to 30 players the Eagles could get with their first pick. Between moving up into the 20s, moving back deeper into the 30s, or just staying where they are at 32. Wide swath of guys to choose from. That's part of what makes it tricky when you pick 32. That's why we go to the Diddy. He's not in the war room right now, but he thinks like a general manager. The general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles, Ray Dininger. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
Good, Joe. How are you,
Ray,
doing?
Ray, why didn't they ever hire you? I mean, why, Ray, were your talents wasted on the outside? Should have been in there.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people ask me about that. And it's very funny. Over the years, whenever the Eagles would go off the rails, you know, and they'd go into a stretch where they were just really bad,
right?
Like bottom of the barrel, a movement would start afoot. And it usually started at WIP. Why don't the Eagles hire Ray Dininger to be general manager? No one ever said this when the things were going well.
That's true.
But when, they were, a chalk outline of a body laying on the sidewalk, that's when everybody all of a sudden started calling for me.
Sure.
I'm perfectly happy doing what I did over the years. But I do enjoy being the amateur armchair general manager on draft day. And this figures to be a very lively one for the reasons that you just said, is that there is no consensus out there. Everybody has different ideas of where they're going to go. I mean, you just rattled it off. It's not even like we're talking about the same position. I mean, some people are talking about tight ends.
Yep.
Some people are talking about cornerbacks. Some people are talking about safeties, edge rushers, tackles. It's all over the place. But if there's good news to this, the bottom line is everybody you just mentioned is a really good player. I don't know that there's a wrong answer there. I mean, those are all good players, but somewhere along the line tonight, the Eagles are going to have to make a decision.
No question. So, Ray, let's get to that. Let's start with this, because we'll break it down with all these dudes, but let me just start with this. When we go to bed tonight, give us three players that if the Eagles end up with them, reasonable, not guys that are going to go in the top 10, but reasonable to get. Three guys that you think if the Eagles get one of these three, people should be very happy.
Well, I mean, last time I talked to you, I told you at that time, I was like super high on Mike Green, the pass rusher from Marshall.
Yep.
Now, when I had that conversation with you, I was unaware of all the off the field stuff. I was just basing it. I was just basing it on what I saw on tape.
Sure.
And what I felt then and what I feel today is the same. In terms of a pass rusher, just a pure off the corner pass rusher, he's the best in the draft. He's number one. I mean, if you just look at the tape and what you're looking for is an edge rusher who's going to get to the quarterback, Mike Green is your guy. Now, and that was what I said the last time I spoke to you about that. And then I began getting all these emails from people saying, "Aren't you aware of all the allegations?"
Sure.
And all the and then all of a sudden, then I started researching it, and then I found out what there was there. Now, he's never been charged with anything formally. It still falls under the heading of allegations. But we know how the Eagles feel about that stuff. Howie was pretty clear about it at his press conference. So I would say probably he's unlikely for the Eagles. But I will tell you, I still feel as a player, I still feel the same way I felt back then. As a pass rusher, he's going to be an impact player in this league like right away. He really is. But I don't think he's going to be in play for the Eagles tonight. Maybe, but I would doubt it. So you say three. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to start at the University of Georgia. It seems where all decisions start for this team, and that's not a bad thing. I'll give you two players out of there that I like very much. I like Jalen Walker, who he's a mystery man in this draft. I
mean, many questions about him.
Yeah, part of the problem is nobody knows what he is.
Yeah,
you know, and scouts and general managers don't like that. They want to know, is he a linebacker or is he an edge rusher?
That's the thing, Ray. This new position, this new concept of the off-ball inside linebacker who can also get up on the line of scrimmage and be an edge guy, this idea, then you've got permutations off of that. You've got guys who can do that, but then they're more credible as a coverage linebacker,
right,
as compared to an edge rusher. So you've got all like different amounts of expert ability in different vicinities of this new job description that is be an off-ball coverage type linebacker who can also go beat an offensive tackle with your pass rush moves. This is crazy town. Like this is an area that was there weren't players like this when I was playing. So it really is like uncharted territory. I have no idea what Vic Fangio basically who he thinks will fit best into his schemes. Who do you think, Ray? You say you love Jalen Walker, and you know Georgia does matter. Jalen Walker being so well rounded, it does feel like you will always have a place for a guy who can do as much as he can.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, he was an edge rusher a couple of years ago. This year they moved him to the off-ball linebacker. And for the early part of the season, I saw a little bit of an adjustment. If you look at his tape early versus his tape late, he got much better the year went along. Because the change that you make is you're taking a guy off the line and you're asking him to play the game in space. And you're asking, all the angles are changing. He's going to have to make tackles in space, which he didn't have to make before. It's a whole different game. And it took him not a long time, but it took him a little bit before he got comfortable with it. But once he did, ooh, boy, he was good. You know, he's 6'1", he's 245, which some people would describe as a tweener. I don't know that he fits in every scheme's defense. He would in mine, because everywhere you put him, all he does is make plays for you. This is what makes him a very problematic kind of projection for the personnel people, because I have seen him in some mock drafts go as high as 7th or 8th overall.
Wow.
I've seen other mock drafts that have him going in the 20s, which would put him within easy reach of the Eagles for a trade-up.
Yeah.
But to talk about a guy who moved from edge rusher to linebacker this year, and over the course of the year, he won the Butkus Award as the nation's outstanding linebacker.
Yeah, how about that?
In his first year at the position. So, and he looks like a guy who's very smart. He's always in the right spot, and plays incredibly hard, like a lot of the Georgia guys do.
And the leadership, and what you hear, what you read about on the draft profiles is like, his leadership is legendary in the halls of Georgia football.
Kind of the way N'Kobe was. People talked about N'Kobe that way.
Yes, very much so. Very much, and apparently, like N'Kobe Dean did at the combine, just knocked it out of the park in terms of the interviews. When the personnel guys and the GMs and the coaches got these guys in a room and began talking to them, I mean, he was so impressive that people just fell in love with the guy. In much the same way they did with N'Kobe Dean, it very much is a Georgia thing. Those are the kind of kids they recruit. That's the way they develop them. And listen, University of Georgia helped the Eagles just win a Super Bowl.
That's where I will
throw him out there first. And when I went on NBC this week, they asked me to pick a guy, and he was my pick because I just think he's solid, and I just don't think you can go wrong with him. The other guy that to answer Joe's question, if you can feel good about, again, I'm going to go to Georgia, Malachi Starks. I thought he was the best safety in this draft. I think he's not, for one thing, safeties don't tend to get drafted very high. Even like a guy like Kyle Hamilton dropped way farther than he should have. And Starks is probably going to drop a little bit tonight because when he went to the combine and ran, he ran slower than people thought. And a lot of people are downgrading him. So he probably went from a guy that could have gone in the late teens to a guy that's probably going to be going somewhere in the mid-20s tonight. But he's a guy that's going to come in and be an immediate plug-and-play guy. I mean, he can play the safety position. He can play the two deep. He can play the one high. If teams go to spread formations, he can play man-for-man, almost like a corner. He's extremely versatile and really tough and always plays well, and especially plays well in big games, which I like a lot. So my third guy to get away from Athens, Georgia, and go somewhere else, I'm going to say Walter Nolan. Whose name you've probably heard a lot in the last week or so, and for good reason. He's 6'3" and a half, almost 6'4". He weighs just on the edge of 300 pounds. He was so much better this year than he had been before. I mean, he was a good player. He was a real prospect when you saw him play at Texas A&M. But he was inconsistent. I mean, you'd see a couple games where you'd say, wow, this guy's really something. And then a couple games where he was, eh. This year he went to Ole Miss, and that wasn't the case. This year at Ole Miss, he was balling every week. And you see that kind of growth in a guy's game and in his preparation and his intensity level. And that's really impressive. And in the SEC, if you talked about interior defensive linemen, and SEC is a very high level of football, and you talk about interior defensive linemen, he led all interior defensive linemen in the SEC in both quarterback pressures and tackles for loss. So he's a guy that's extremely quick off the ball. You absolutely had to double team him. That's what teams are trying to do, and he was still wrecking games. You put him next to Jalen Carter, who are you going to block? I mean, you're going to have to double somebody, and if teams based on track record now, they're going to start off, they're going to block Jalen Carter, they're going to double him. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to put Walter Nolan one-on-one a lot, and based on what I've seen now, he could be very, very dangerous in that role.
Yeah, I love Walter Nolan, too. I think they could trade up. If he's sitting there at, 25 or 26, they might make that move. So, Ray, you say you like Malachi Starks the most out of all the safeties, including Nick Emmanwori, the safety out of South Carolina? Or is that you like him the most out of the safeties that you think will be around at 32?
Oh no, I like him that much.
Wow,
I like him that much. The South Carolina kid is very impressive, and is if you're just going on sheer athletic ability, boy, he looks the part, and he can really run. I just don't know that he's as
good a football player.
Yeah, I mean, I know he tested great, and he's a very good player. But honestly, among my safeties, he was third.
Who's second?
I had Xavier Watts.
Wow.
I had Xavier Watts at Notre Dame because he has one quality that I just love in a safety. He's around the football, and he's a playmaker.
Yeah. Awesome.
Last two years led all defensive backs in interceptions and passes broken up. He's around the football.
Productive.
And that's what you need. You need a guy that has that radar. If you're looking for a safety, you need a guy that has that radar that can find the football. And let's face it, I mean, without Gardner Johnson was a playmaker. And he got you turnovers. He got you takeaways. And you're going to have to replace those. You're going to have to find them somewhere. And, Starks is a really good player, and he'll get you some. But Watts, if you're talking about who's the next guy, I would say Watts because he has the ability, and when he gets to a ball, he catches it. He doesn't knock it down. He catches it. So he would be, right now, he would be my number two in the safety position. But all those guys are really good. Everything you're hearing, if you talk to people around the league who seem to have a sense of what's going on, their feeling is the Eagles are very high on Nolan. I can understand that because the idea of putting him next to Carter, boy, I mean, the Eagles would be a very impressive front. The one trend that I've noticed, and I don't know how much this is influencing the Eagles' thinking, but I know it's influencing some people around the league, is it's hard, I think, for the reasons that you said earlier, John. Teams are finding it hard to judge edge rushers because they don't exactly know what they are. They're sort of inventing this position on the fly, and when you do that, you make mistakes, and you get seduced by guys' individual workouts. You get seduced by their 40 times. And you project them as athletes as opposed to necessarily where they're going to fit in your defense. And if you can swing and miss big on an edge rusher. And all, you just go back over some recent drafts and look at guys who fall under that job description, edge rushers. And look at, you know, Lucas Van Ness, Kayon Thibodeau, Chase Young, Cleland Farrell, Solomon Thomas, even Derek Barnett. You know, guys that were what you drafted to be edge rushers and what you thought that they were going to be fell short because you're still trying to figure out what that position is. So I think that's what makes people maybe a little bit leery of drafting guys in the edge. They're going to do it because you need those players, but it's easy to miss there. I think it's harder to miss on a defensive tackle because those roles and what you're going to ask those guys to do, you have a much clearer picture of what you're looking for. So sometimes, if you're just talking defensive line, and I really do think the Eagles are looking defensive line, and they should, sometimes it's safer to go with the inside player than it is to take the guy on the edge, because there's less unknown.
Mm. Ray Dittinger with us here. By the way, it's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia on this very busy Thursday morning draft, and obviously a lot with the Phillies as well, as we broadcast from the Tasty Cake studio. Wonderful to have you with us. Wonderful to have Ray with us. Ray, I want to go just give you side-by-side names. And you tell us, if these two players are available, who you would take. I'm going to give you three different case studies here. The first is the cornerback Maxwell Hairston versus the defensive tackle Kenneth Grant from Michigan. Which would you take?
Oh, that's a real good one. Because to me, those two guys are, if you're looking at overall value, they're very comparable.
In completely different ways,
absolutely,
completely different positions.
That's right.
Exactly.
And by the way, trade down is not an acceptable answer.
No.
I'm playing around.
No. I really like Kenneth Grant. I do. I really like Kenneth Grant. I think that he's probably going to be underdrafted because there's been so much attention paid to Mason Graham, who plays next to him at Michigan. But every time I saw Kenneth Grant play, to me, he and Graham are kind of like very close. I mean, most people in their grades have Graham very, very high, and they should because he is a good player. And they have Grant significantly lower. I would have them much closer. I think they were very comparable kinds of players. So if the way you offer that up to me, I would probably take Grant. And I think the Eagles, to me, could they go corner? Yeah, they could. I mean, could they go safety? Sure, they could. I mean, because they have needs there. I mean, you got to replace Slay. You got to replace Gardner Johnson. But I think with this defense and with this coach especially, it all begins on the line. It really does. It begins on the defensive line. Hell, that's what won the Super Bowl for you. So, and you've had significant losses up there. And while there's probably a temptation when you look at this and you look at the quality of the defensive linemen in this draft, there's probably going to be some sentiment in the room tonight that are going to say, you know, listen, there are a lot of really good defensive linemen here. You know, we can, and with all the picks that we have, 20 over the next 2 years, I mean, we can wheel and deal and get some defensive linemen. We don't necessarily have to jump for them in the first round, which maybe takes you to another place. But to me, if you have really good ones, and there are really good ones in this draft, both interior and on the edge, then I think that's where it starts with the Eagles. I'd be very surprised if they came away tonight with anything other than a defensive lineman.
All right, Ray, next grouping here. Which one would you take, Jahad Campbell or James Pierce Jr.?
Oh, Campbell.
All right, and third one. You talked a lot about these two, but I'm curious if they're side-by-side, which you're picking. Walter Nolan or Malachi Starks?
I would probably take Nolan. I would probably take Nolan because the more I've been, the more I watched Nolan play, and I began projecting him as a pairing with Carter. I just thought that could be dynamite inside. It really could with those two guys. And listen, I just told you how much I like Starks.
Yep.
I think Starks is the best safety in the draft. But I think you can get a safety in the second round, maybe even a guy like Watts. But you're not going to get another player of the quality of Nolan in the second round. That's just not going to happen. And I'm going to be real curious to see where Nolan goes because I'm a little bit surprised at the split of opinion on him. There are some people that I've talked to that love him, and I'm sort of in that camp. I think he's really that good. But there are other people that just say, geez, the guy just moves around. I mean, he went to like a million different high schools. He's transferred colleges. And, you know, there's a little bit of a thing. Why can't he stay in one place if he's that good? I don't know. All I can tell you is the difference in his play from last year to this past season and the move that he made from A&M to Ole Miss and the way he played. Again, how consistent. He had some spectacular times at A&M just on his physical ability. But the consistency, which to me translates into maturity, that he showed this year at Ole Miss, to me put him up on that next tier. And listen, I think he could be a top 10 pick. I mean, there are some people that really like him that much. Hmm. I would think he's probably going to drop a little bit. I'd be surprised if he dropped. You know, John was talking about maybe sort of mid-20s. I don't know if he's going to get that far. If he's the guy the Eagles like, and I kind of think they do like him, they'll have to trade up. But they might not have to trade up that far, depending on how the board falls.
Ray, another guy who could very easily drop and is a Georgian is Mikel Williams. Just an unbelievable cookie-cutter size for a 4-3 edge rusher. But right. Nowhere close to the production. You know, so like the opposite of what you've been talking about. I think a big reason why Howie Roseman has gotten so much better at drafting is he did away with looking at the standing broad jump numbers and he started looking at the game tape and weighing that so much more than the vertical leap stuff at the combine. This guy, Mikel Williams, man, he's got every measurable you can imagine, but just never put it together on a field of play. So
Correct. He's
one of those guys who could fall. Like, he could go, based on the measurables, in the top 10, he could fall into the second round, third round, I don't know. That could be crazy. But is he a guy that you personally would target, especially because you can ask the Georgia guys, hey, what do you think of him? Or is he off your list because of the lack of just good football instincts?
The tape for this year was a little bit troubling. He was better last year than he was this year.
The thing,
he's 6'5", he's 270 pounds. He can really move. He's very fluid looking. But if that's the case, why did he only have 5 sacks this year? I think that when I talked to some people who have close ties to Georgia, what they said was, and this made sense when you went back and looked at the film again with this knowledge, was he played all year on a bad ankle. And the thing that a year ago that made him really good and caught your eye was his first step. I mean, when the ball was snapped, man, he was coming. And that first step was what made him special. This year, if what I'm hearing is true, he played all year on a bad ankle, didn't complain about it, didn't miss time. He went out there and played. But he's playing on a bad ankle, then that's going to compromise that first step, which took him from being like a 5-star player down to like a 3.5. So now you have to weigh that. You would assume that coming into camp next year, if whatever team drafts him, that he'll be back and he'll be healthy and he'll be
You'd
playing more like he
You'd also assume that would heal at some point, too.
You would assume right? so. You would assume so. But, I mean, that's what you're talking about with Williams. Oh, sure. Yeah. When I was looking at all these players, I absolutely looked at him because I was looking at all the Georgia guys. But, I mean, if I don't see him. Look, he just based on the tape and just based on his sheer athletic ability, he will be a first-round pick. And I'm going to be kind of curious to see where he goes, because some teams could really love him and take him in the top 12. Other teams could kind of back away based on what they saw this year, and maybe he falls into the 20s. But if I'm the Eagles and I had a choice, let's say between if I'm looking at them on tiers for the Eagles, and I'm looking at the three Georgia guys, I would go Walker 1, Starks 2, Williams 3.
Mm-hmm. Final thing here, Ray, and this is tremendous draft deep dive here. I'm just going to hop over to the Phils and ask you this one question. And I think this is the thing probably floating through a lot of people's minds right now. The last 2 weeks, because the question is what's going on with the Phils, so let's get to it in a different way. The last 2 weeks, blip on the radar screen in their quest to be a truly great elite contending team, or a real sign of trouble that leads to genuine concern? Which is it?
I had questions about them coming into the season. So, you know, Glenn and I were out to dinner like just when the season was just getting ready to start. And we were talking. We were out with another couple. And Glenn and the other guy were talking about, where the Phillies were going to finish this year. And Glenn and the other guy were, like, really excited about him and, you know, said, I think they're going to win the division, and I think they have a real chance to go to the World Series. And I wasn't saying anything. and they said, you didn't say it. And I said, I don't see it. I really don't. Mm. And so we made a little bet. Glenn and I always love our bets.
Yep.
And so he said, okay, I'll give you an over-under on wins. And Glenn said, set it at 90. And Glenn said, I'm absolutely taking the over. And I said, I'm taking the under.
Wow.
Because I the bullpen scared me. I wasn't sure at this point how effective Nola would be. I didn't think he was going to be 0-5, but I wasn't sure that he was going to be all that. I wasn't sure what you were going to get out of Suarez. Sanchez looked good last year, but I don't know if he's long-term answer. Painter, they keep talking. He's going to be, okay, fine, but I haven't seen him. And they still have the same annoying holes in the lineup. They're still susceptible to these hot and cold streaks where, you know, all of a sudden they can't score runs. Defensively, I don't think they're very good. Everybody talks about them as this kind of, and Real Muto clearly is on the decline. So, I just didn't see them as that good. And I thought the Mets were going to be good, and they are. I thought the Braves are going to be really good, and they're struggling like crazy. But I think they'll come on. I had my doubts about this team all along. Now I don't think they're going to completely collapse. But if you asked me going into the season to rate the NL East, I would have told you I would have put both the Braves and the Mets ahead of the Phillies. So what they're going through right now isn't all that surprising, because a lot of the things that I worried about have kind of come to the fore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. For what people were concerned about, and this Romano guy's 10 times worse than any of us could have ever imagined.
They were putting a lot in him. They were really counting on him being the ninth inning guy. He had his issues, and it had been a while since he had been that guy. And I didn't expect him to be the disaster that he's been so far. But, I mean, that has certainly exacerbated the other problems. But there were other problems. And, I hope that they get it together. They do still have some really good players. But I just think top to bottom, my fear about this team is that they had their time. They had their chance. And it's passed. And they're now on that other side of the hill. And I hope I'm wrong about that, but the struggles that they're having right now haven't been all that surprising to me.
Ray, love you. Unbelievable commentary. Enjoy the draft tonight. It's always a special night. Let's hope it's more like a Hertz than a Reger. You know what I'm saying? Let's hope Howie nails it. Ray, stay well, buddy. Always great having you on the program. Thank you, Ray.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Ray.
The Diddy. Ray did enjoy. All right. Jason Kelce famously said a number of years ago, hungry dogs run faster. Phils don't look to me to be very hungry right now. But it's early in the morning. It's probably breakfast time for Jason Kelce. Maybe he's hungry right now.
I am very hungry. Yeah.
From Garage Beer. We know and we love him, Mr. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Joe?
How you been, man?
Listen, I just had a baby. Life
congratulations.
Is good. Yeah,
congratulations.
I slept very little, and I feel like even wrong saying that, knowing what Kylie dealt with last night. So I'll stop complaining here. But it's a newborn. She's beautiful. Family's great. We're Easter weekend down at the shore doing Easter egg hunts and all that stuff. Almost watched the Phillies. just talking about the Phillies blowing 11-4 lead over the weekend. But yeah, other than that, it was an outstanding day.
How are the older siblings taking to the new baby girl? Is everyone fitting in well?
Yeah, they're all. I mean, the two oldest ones, which I mean, oldest like 5 and 4, are Wyatt and Ellie. They are fantastic with the new one. The one that's really struggling is Benny, who's 2 years old, and she really still wants to be attached to mom, but mom doesn't have the ability to do that. Right. She has another human literally attached to her. And for me, it's selfishly awesome because Benny's like just over 2 years old, like at such an adorable age. So this has happened with each one of my kids where when the new one's born, it's dad's job to kind of take the one that needs the comforting still. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun, selfishly for me, to be with Bennett while Callie's been really hunkered down with
Sure.
Him.
Well, congrats, man.
The age where Benny can run and get up every flight of steps and down every flight of steps, and everything has to be baby-proof.
Yeah, she's still kind of terrible at all of it. But
yeah,
she
so you have to be
it.
One step in front or behind her for every step that she takes. So this is
you can never leave her alone,
but it's also exhausting.
Yeah, it's the most exhausting age from that perspective.
For
sure,
you can't just like let her go do whatever she wants to do.
Exactly,
honor,
that's not
just, even for 5 minutes or like 2 minutes.
Not
you know,
even
yeah,
for 1 second.
But there's also this like in. Like, one of the beautiful things about kids is, like, they're experience everything. Like, all these things you take for granted on a daily basis, they're like, wow, look at all that flower. I'm like, I've looked at that flower for 10 years and never freaking noticed this flower. And she's just starting to be able to articulate all these things that she's been thinking. And it's a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Jason Kelsey with us here for about the next hour. You can weigh in 215-592-9494. So the draft's tomorrow. How close have you followed this draft lead up, Jason? Obviously, you've been busy, to say the least, with the family. Are you on top of who you like? Who you know? Like, do you have a feel for that?
I'm on top of some of the offensive line prospects for sure, and I'm watching some of those guys. And I'm in talks still with, you know, I still keep in touch with Stout and people within the building. I did not watch a lot of college football this season. I keep in touch with kind of the coverage leading up to it, so everything everybody else is seeing. You know, guys that I think are really talented and great experts at evaluating these guys. I like to listen to what they say. But at the same time, you know, I try not to get too caught up with the pre-draft stuff because, as everybody knows, what happens and what is said before the draft is way different than what happens after. I really love the moment these guys are picked, when they get in the building, and you really get to start to see who they are, how they interact, what motivates them. Because that's really ultimately what culminates to seeing which guys pan out.
Yeah. You know, interesting tweet, John. I saw a tweet from Zach Berman a couple days ago. And I want to present this one, everyone listening, because I thought this was a great point that we really haven't examined much. So Berman a couple days ago tweeted, and we're going to get to the Cam Jurgens thing. I know, Jason, you're super psyched about Cam getting that deal. So listen to this Berman tweet a few days ago. He said, "What can the Cam Jurgens story tell you about the Eagles' draft plans?" Question mark. And he goes, "Something I harp on every year, don't look at this year's needs. The Eagles don't want to use the draft to find their starters this year. Project their 2026 and 2027 needs. It's the way they've approached the draft for much of Howie Roseman's time as GM, especially since 2016. You know, John, we've talked a lot this year about they need an edge rusher, they need a safety, they need a D-tackle, or at least they could certainly use one. But what Zach Berman's saying is maybe expand your mind.
Yeah.
You know, because.
Don't think everyone needs to stop thinking that rookies can come in and play, because last year is such an outlier. Last year, us having our top two rookies come in and be studs and be starters, that is so weird. That is crazy outside the box. That never happens. And if it does, it's like out of need and they stink and they're losing games for you as often as they're making plays. We got, man, so fortunate. And it's just wonderful having that level of excellence and nailing it in the draft. But these picks as players, you look at these kids who come in and you're like, oh, man.
can't even look at his hands when he's trying to catch. Like, what is he doing? Like, why?
Veteran
why
John Ritchie here
is his technique as it is. Yeah. Like, seriously, every single one of them, and you're rolling your eyes, and they are works in progress. And you can't imagine that guy is ever going to be able to do what he's supposed to do at that position.
But the irony is
that year.
Yeah, but both you guys, ironically. And not first or second round picks. Both of you started as rookies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but to John's point, that often doesn't happen, especially when you get later in the draft.
And I was told repeatedly by every coach on my team that for every rookie that you start, you lose a game. I can't tell you how many times I heard that adage, hey, this is the truth, rookie. Every rookie you start, you're going to lose. There's the loss. Then the next week, there's the loss. Thanks a lot, rookie.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean, yeah, out of necessity for, in my case, and I don't know what the situation was for.
It was similar. I mean, I was drafted into the perfect situation. I mean, Howard Mudd had just been brought in. He wanted a more athletic center. We had Jamal Jackson, who was coming back off of injury, who was not the style center that he wanted. So I had a leg up. It was very clear from early on that they wanted me to start, and by they, I mean Howard mostly. And I got every opportunity to take that position. And I played really well, but I was still, looking back, it's so funny watching old tape of yourself as you get older in the league and you like, what was I doing? Why was I doing that? Like, it's awful technique. Like, I was getting away with it because I was younger and stronger maybe, but there's a ton for these rookies to learn and get better at. And especially when you have the amount of veterans that the Eagles have had for years and still have over there, like Lane Johnson, whatever guy's going to be coming, he's going to be learning from one of the best tackles to ever play the game.
Right.
And usually, top 15 pick, those guys are expected to play right away, typically. But outside of that, most of these guys should not start. And if they are starting, usually that's a position of need or some type of reason that you don't want to be.
Or a really bad team.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is a guy that gets picked, let's put it this way, 33rd pick has a better chance to start than the 32nd pick. 33rd pick is a horrible team. It's the first pick in the second round. 32nd pick is the best team in football.
Super Bowl team, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So but, were you mad when you were drafted? Were you?
What kind of question is that?
Which Seltzer, outweighed?
Seltzer, your dream came true. Yeah. Were you mad?
Right. A bit of a weird one.
So they were drafted.
Well, that's true. Did that tick you off? And then were you then like? How did the opportunity of being able to play right away? How did that factor in?
I didn't know that it was going to be that. That opportunity was going to be there until. Early in training camp when I was kind of told, like, hey, like, do you want to play this year? We like what we see so far.
Wow. Get all the way till training camp.
So I came in the lockout year.
We
had no OTAs.
Yep.
No off-season program. My first day getting the playbook was 2 days before training camp.
That's wild.
And you started?
as a
rookie. Yeah.
That also means Jason was a dream teamer,
right
by the way.
It was. That was a very fun year to be an Eagle. Complete chaos.
More fun for you, probably, than for us.
I mean, I'm playing with all these, like, living legends.
You are.
Like,
no, you're right. Player. You're
I'm,
right.
It's mind-blowing enough that I'm snapping the ball to Michael Vick.
Right. Yeah.
And then Mike goes out, and in comes Vince Young. And
that's awesome.
What the heck is happening? It was incredible. I played with huge name players. And like it was a lot of talk in the town. This is back when we were at Lehigh.
Yep.
So many fans came to the practice. I remember just like, what the? There were more fans at the practice than were at college games of mine at times. And it was a very eye-opening experience going straight to training
camp
with the Philadelphia
Eagles. Yeah, I'm sure. All right, let's get some calls in here.
No air conditioning.
With Jason. Well, yeah, that's a whole other matter. All right, with Jason here, phone calls 215-592-9494. Obviously, not good with the Phils, guys. I mean, just it's not good. And if they don't get their act together, the manager's going to get fired. And I don't think he's even close to the primary culprit. But these guys aren't playing well at all. Jordan right now. Jordan, good morning.
Morning show. Good morning, Philadelphia. How are we today?
I mean, great. Pretty good. Got a draft tomorrow.
Right?
Except for the Phillies. That's right.
Jason, it's an honor to be on with you. And I just want to say, hey, Philly, respect this man. He's really kind with his time when he's out in public. Nothing I hate more than Kelsey being harassed. Happened at my short town a couple summers ago in Margate. Come on back to Ventnor and Margate, Jason. We're going to take care of you. But please, guys, respect this man. He's a treasure for us.
There you go. Yeah, I appreciate it. Everybody is awesome. I get this is part of the path I chose, being out in the public or whatever.
Yeah.
Listen, you get to make people's day, especially kids coming up to you. And that Margate situation was unfortunate, but it's not going to keep me from going to Stephen Cookies. That's for damn
sure. There you go.
Oh, man. Stephen Cookies, baby.
There's a good stretch there. Tomatoes and like.
Oh, my God.
I'm a big fan of that zone right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Big fan.
The duck at Stephen Cookies has got to be the best thing ever.
Okay.
Oh, definitely get the duck with the blueberry sauce and the corn souffle. It's one of the best dishes ever.
All blueberried. That and then the blueberry pie.
Speaking of food real quick, I'm actually flying to Copenhagen today. Richie, you complimented me on being a dad yesterday. So my older son plays Hendrix. My younger son loves fine dining. We're going to Noma in Copenhagen, and he doesn't know about it. I'm picking him up from school.
Wow. So that's the best restaurant in the world, or at least ranked as the best restaurant in the world.
It has been several times. They retire it like you get in the Hall of Fame. So
yeah.
I can't wait to surprise him with that. But wow. I was in Copenhagen a couple of years ago, up very late night after a meal, listening to Lorenzen throw a no-hitter.
Wow.
So potentially, I will go back to Copenhagen, and well, it ain't going to be Aaron Nola throwing a no-hitter, but let's see. Let's see who we can pull through.
Please.
A couple of things from the Phillies game last night. You know, yesterday I moaned and complained about situational hitting. Oh, my God. It's almost like I willed them to be horrible in those situations. But, you know, three things I picked up on specifically. Romano is making a noise like he's hitting a tennis ball in a serve when he throws. And I don't know if the sound was particularly good, but I don't know a lot of pitchers who make that grunt when they throw.
You know, Nola was making a noise the other night, too.
I wonder if the mic, not the mic, what do you call it? The boom mic? What do you call that?
It's been weird. The first game, they had all those. I think there's something going on with the mics at Citi Field.
They're picking up
more. Yeah, because I'm with you. You don't hear that often, but I'm sure pitchers make more noise than we hear.
And my point, Jordan, is
the grunt. I mean, you're activating your core if you're grunting. That's a good
Monica
sign.
Celis. Do you remember her?
I mean, that's pretty much any female tennis player.
She was.
So it was like another level?
Oh.
She was. It was 10 different levels. Blood curdling. Every
that was
hit.
A good grunt.
It was unbelievable.
Good grunt.
Yeah. It was like.
Good grunt.
It should have exhausted her, that level of screaming.
Oh, it was.
That amount of times.
Every time.
That was an impression. I'll cut that audio.
Second point, we keep talking about Kirkering being a high leverage guy.
Man.
I'm not seeing it. You know, he's letting the inherited runners on, and I like this kid. He's got a lot of potential, but he just seems very deer in headlights now when he comes on with runners that he's inherited.
Did it ever feel? We've been told for a long time now that Kirkering, he's been inserted in these high leverage spots for a long time. It doesn't feel like he's ever made good on the promise.
Well, he did last
year. That was expected.
Well, last year was ERA. He was like a mid-2 ERA last year. I mean,
I guess it just hasn't felt as dominant as I was told that the goods were going to be.
Yeah, he's been very disappointing this season.
I don't understand why. I don't understand because I can see his stuff breaks hard. I can see when he wants to, you know, get behind it, he's going to throw 98.
You know what he's doing, John? He's pulling a Sir Anthony. He's not living up to what you thought he'd be. And ultimately, they dumped Sir Anthony because of that.
But Jordan, they kept him around for about 5 years wondering.
Jordan, give me a notable breakthrough. You can win the Phillies tickets.
When Janet Jackson's right nipple broke through her dress.
Oh, my God. Yes! What a great answer.
That is outrageous. So I write these things down. Janet
Literal
Jackson and nipple. All right, fair enough. By the way, it's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia as we broadcast today from the Tasty Cake Studio. We got Jason with us. We may not have Christopher Sanchez with us later this season if he's injured. I know James is extremely concerned about it. Let's listen to Rob Thompson after the game last night. If you missed it, Chris Sanchez taken out after 2 innings. Obviously, he's been one of their 2 best starters this year. Not as sharp early last night. Not a disaster, but not to his same level. They even talked after the game, and JT talked. You could tell in the bullpen session before the game, he just didn't seem quite the same. But Sanchez didn't say anything to Rob Thompson before the game. 2 innings in, Rob Thompson noticed something, went over to him. Listen to this exchange.
Left forearm tightness. Saw the doc. Not expecting any structural damage. We'll reevaluate. We'll know in the next couple days.
When did you first start complaining of it?
The first I heard of it was after the second inning. I went down and I talked to him and said, "How you doing?" And he said, usually he goes, "Oh, I'm good." Or I said, "Are you all right?" And usually he says, yeah, I'm good. And this time he just nodded. I said, "Tell me what's going on." And he said, "I'm just, my arm's a little bit tight." I said, "Okay, that's it. We're done."
Will he go for an MRI tomorrow?
We'll know more tomorrow.
Okay, that's it. We're done. So obviously Topper pulled it quick when he heard that news. James, I know you're particularly freaked out on this one.
Yeah, forearm tightness and Tommy John go together. You know, it is a harbinger. Now, again, it doesn't mean it's a lock. He's going to get Tommy John, but usually or a fair amount of time, you know, when you see a forearm injury as the injury preceding it, a lot of times Tommy John surgery follows it. It's a bad sign.
That would be a disaster. I mean, because this team needs excellent starting pitching, because the bullpen's clearly not going to be good. It's just not. And then the lineup can be better, but I think for the most part they are what they are, meaning they're going to be inconsistent. This team requires excellent starting pitching to make the playoffs in a loaded National League. This would be an enormous setback. We'll see. We'll find out. 215-592-9494. You know, Jason, all the times we've had you in here, and I've heard you speak publicly, obviously, for over a decade,
yeah,
I feel like we know so much, but I don't remember hearing this draft day experience for
you.
Yeah. Because all these kids tomorrow, not just the guys that get taken by the Eagles, but all these, you know, a couple hundred guys, the next couple days, it's, you know, a dream's going to come true. What was that day? And those two, was it 2 days back then?
It was 3 days.
Back then?
I believe.
Okay.
I think it was 3 days at that point.
I think it was two, but I could. What was it like for you? I mean,
so I knew I wasn't. I knew I wasn't going to be a first round guy, and I knew I wasn't likely going to be a second or third round guy. So my family and everybody, we designed something for the third day, 4 through 7, and we, you know, I didn't know where it was going to happen there or if it was going to happen. But I had been told there was a good chance I was going to go in the 5th, 6th round, so that's what I was expecting.
So you had your agent already, or
had my agent already? Yep, agent is already secured, but he's not there on draft day. We stayed in Cincinnati. We went bowling because I didn't want to watch the draft. I felt like that would have been like
nerve-wracking.
Just kind of like try and sit after pick after pick after.
Even day three. So yeah. you were not watching it as it happened.
I was not watching it, and we start bowling at the start of the day, and We finish bowling, and I still haven't been drafted, so that's not good. It's like, all right, now what do we do? So I went back to the house, and I'm just in my room. Everybody's out in the living room. A lot of my teammates in college, Travis, my parents, my uncle, and my phone gets – well, I see – I'm kind of falling on my phone at this point. Man, I might not get drafted. I don't really know what's happening. The Chiefs had selected. They were one of the teams that was really interested. They picked Rodney Hudson early, so I'm like, they're probably out on a center now. I only took other two top 30 visits were the Eagles and the Rams. So I'm like, I'm going to be undrafted. But I saw the Eagles had two picks coming up back-to-back, and I'm like, all right, maybe there's a chance that this happens here. And sure enough, I get a call from a 215 number. It's Andy Reid. And have you been any accidents? You've been any car crashes? And my heart's going a million miles an hour. And I'm like, no, I'm good. He's like, okay, you're healthy. Everything's fine. And I was like, yeah, everything's great. And he says, all right, here's how it's going to work. We're going to draft you with this next pick. I'm going to hand the phone to our general manager, Howie Roseman. Then I'm going to hand the phone to our offensive coordinator, Marty Morningwick. Then I'm going to hand the phone to our offensive line coach, Howard Mutt. And I was like, all right, sounds good. And he's like, all right, you got that? I'm like, I got that. And he's like, all right, what did I just say? And I'm like, I have no idea. And right away, he's like, you're going to be playing in front of 70,000 people in Philly. I need you to have better composure than this. Like, yeah. He's giving me crap already. So
it was
awesome. My dad, at some point, you're still on the phone while the pick has happened out there. So you hear people cheering. And then my dad comes in, and he's crying. And it's just, you know, like you said, You're anxious and you're frustrated with watching how the day goes, and like you want to be picked higher. You think you're better than what's being kind of you're given credit for. But the moment they call your name, for me at least, It's just such an unbelievable experience. Your whole life you've worked for it. You've played this game. All of your friends and family are there, at least I think if you do it right. And it's just an awesome, awesome moment.
That's
how much did you know about Philadelphia? I mean, being one state over.
I really didn't know anything. I had been for like a visit. I think we played like a lacrosse tournament here or something like that in high school. So like we did like the Liberty Bell, ate a cheesesteak from like Geno's or Pat's.
Yeah.
And that was my extent, right? I had no idea what I was in store for. My agent told me right away, like, you're going to fit in. This is a town that loves offensive linemen. They love football. Like you really, this is going to be an awesome fit for you, Jason. So I'm like, all right, if you say so.
Yeah. Jason. Nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really just, it was an awesome moment. It really was. And I think for everybody, like it's just how many other professions are, do you find out you're going to get your job like that? Like
it's so weird.
It's like you have no idea if it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, especially if you're a later on guy. And it's just this incredible feeling of I'm officially an NFL player.
Yeah. I think doctors get assigned where they're
residencies
headed, right?
Yes, for residencies. But even then, it's not like that. Like right. You apply first like four things or five things, and then you get ranked, and then you find out well before. This is like, hey, get on a plane. You're coming to Philly.
Have the option to say, unless you're Eli Manning, you right. say, oh, I'm not going to go.
And there's more right. choice with the you still choose which residency you go to.
That's
here,
wild,
it's
man.
Like you're going wherever they tell you you're going.
Here we got a baseball team we need to talk about. And joining us right now, as he does every Friday, is Scott Fransky, brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Big task for Scott today. He's going to have to make us feel better about the Phillies. What's up, Scott?
Yeah. Do I have a chance?
Maybe.
Yeah, we do. Well, you got well, Scott, no. You always got a chance with me. I don't know about Kyle, because Kyle's, you know.
Kyle's tough to sway. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. But speaking of that, and I know it's early, and I try to tell Kyle that every day, but I'm checking your temperature. How long do we have to deal with this little bit of valley that we're in before we get out of this, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think it'll start turning around now. I mean, I saw a team that, you know, looked like they're lacking confidence head-to-head against the Mets right now. Mets were playing with a lot of confidence right now. And, you know, it just felt like every deficit felt like a pretty big hill to climb. Maybe that's partly the fan in me, right? Yeah. Maybe the guys aren't feeling that really at all. I mean, I think if you talk to them, to a man, they say everything publicly that, you know, that you would want to hear. That is, they understand the peaks and valleys and what a long season it is. And they saw it in the other direction last year, of course, right? Things are going great. It was all wine and roses there till about mid-June. And then, you know, you start to find your struggles. So I do think I would expect them to play a little bit better. Now, this pitching staff is nowhere near as talented as the Mets pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
So you would kind of expect a little more action offensively. Although it's cold and the wind's blowing in today, so today might not be the day for it.
Mm. All right, Scott, let's talk about the offense, because I think it depends on how you want to look at it, how you perceive moving forward, how they're going to do. Because if you just look at their on-base percentage, their walks, times on base, they've improved, right? They're chasing less, all those things we asked for. But they're also slugging less, and they're not hitting with runners in scoring position. So although they've done some things, like the process has been good, they're not scoring enough runs. Scott, how do you view the offense? Do you think, hey, they got the right process, the runs will come, or it doesn't look right and they need to slug more to keep up here with these other teams?
Well, I do think the slug could come and go a little bit, and there's no question they would slug. There's no question in my mind that they will slug more as you get, you know, deeper into the summer. I mean, this is a team with a lot of pop and guys who can do that. But they haven't yet. And there's a variety of reasons why. Obviously every player is individual. I do think that if they, again, we all feel like reaching base on a regular basis more and more often is a good thing. And that's what they're doing. Like you said, we asked them to to change their approach a little bit, chase less, and that's a good thing. I think over the long haul that will play out to their benefit. It will lead to runs being scored, and the slug will come. But I do think that controlling the strike zone, you know, fewer strikeouts, more walks is always a good thing, if you know, for your offense.
Scott Fransky with us here as the Phillies get ready for a series in Chicago against the Cubs here. All right, Scott, let's talk about the bullpen, which has been an issue for the entire season. Now, they've gotten the two lefties have been good. I mean, Alvarado's been really good. Strom has delivered for them. It's the right-handed guys that have struggled here, and it feels like Topper's trying to mix them and put them in different spots, but nothing has stunk. I mean, I guess we could talk about Romano specifically, because the last couple of times he's pitched, he has spoken afterwards about feeling better about his
he's
stuff.
He's good about his stuff. It's just people were hit.
Yeah, it's getting hit around. That's my issue with it. What do you think about what you're seeing there?
Well, keep in mind, I mean, you know, go back, like, you know, Pete Alonso the other day. That's a bad pitch. You know, his stuff, his good stuff got him in a position where he was up in the count 0-2 on Alonso. He just made a bad pitch. Now, what, again, is that because, you know, is that a repeatability, consistency, you know, ability sort of thing? Or is that he's going to get better with that as the season goes on? You know, he's been out. He was out for almost a year. I mean, he basically didn't pitch last year. So I think we could expect that there would be some growing pains. And I think he's already dealt with a few different issues, right? Little mechanical tweak, that the velocity is there now, and it's a consistent velocity. That's important for him. And I think, you know, working on a few other things, you know, whether he might have been tipping pitches last weekend and, you know, against Miami, I think that's a definite possibility. I think we'd know more better if they see the Marlins again. You know what I mean? But it felt like they had something on him. You know, the same thing with Kirkering. I think, you know, the night before against Torrens, the catcher, it was just a bad 0-2 pitch. It's just, it's poor execution in that spot. And, I think the stuff is there, but they're going to have to prove that they can throw it better consistently. And they can't make those pitches 0-2. It's just that those are just crushers, right? You get a guy down in the count like that, you can't lose that battle. I know you lose every now and then, but it's happening way too often. And there's no question, if they don't figure it out, it's going to be tough on that bullpen. It will be tough if they can't get those two right-handers who they expect to be seventh, eighth, ninth inning type guys. Those two you mentioned specifically, Kirkering and Romano, they have to figure that out.
Yeah, they do. And right now there's not, you know, much help on the way. It's still only April for the trade market, or even if they wanted to bring someone up. So those guys got to produce. All right, Scott, let's end with the series that starts this afternoon out at Wrigley Field. And that Cubs team, I thought they were intriguing before the season. I wasn't sure how good they'd be. They might have been better than I thought. They're 16-10. They've been red hot, and they're scoring like 6 runs a game. What do you think about this this Cubs team in this series this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna need to do what you can. Yeah, pitching wise, I mean, their bullpen has problems. There's no doubt about it. They have not been a very good bullpen. They're right there with, you know, basically with the Phillies in terms of some of those numbers. They're kind of piecing the starters together right now a little bit, but they can hit, and they're hot right now. So we'll see. You know, Taiwan will be on the mound today. There's obviously a little bit of concern there with what happened to him his last time out, getting tight. I can't say Christopher Sanchez, they said this morning, he felt normal. He was going to throw. In fact, that might be starting here in about 15 minutes. He was just going to play catch and see how it goes. But they're hopeful that maybe they dodged a bullet there. But, yeah, you're going to have to pitch well, slow these guys down offensively, and you're going to need to score some runs. So we'll see if they can do that.
We shall. Good. That's good news on Sanchez. Hopefully he comes out of that and throwing and feeling well. Scott, we appreciate it. Enjoy Chicago and Wrigley, and we'll be listening
this
afternoon.
Get you some deep dish pizza, man. Get you some deep dish pizza.
Deep dish right across from the hotel. We'll be there.
All right, there it is.
I'll meet you there.
I wish. I'm on a diet. It's shredding season, Scott. I can't, you know.
Oh, you got to make an exception for deep dish.
I can't, no? I can't. I'm too.
All right, I'll meet you there, Scott. It sounds great. Thank you, Scott. Good. We'll talk to you next week. There he goes. Scott Fransky out in Chicago with the Phillies.
This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We're at the Link. It is draft day. Elliot Shore Park's with us through the end of the show. And joining us now, the official draft expert of the WIP Afternoon Show. I bet he didn't know he had that title as well. Mike Mayock joins us. Mike, thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
So, Mike, what is do you have a, I don't know, a tradition? Like, what? How are you handling tonight? Like, what's on the rundown for Mike Mayock tonight as the draft goes?
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, for about 25 years, I had a defined position, whether it was the NFL Network or the Raiders. And then the last couple of years, it's been let's grab a cold beer and
there you go. Just have a little fun.
Yeah, exactly. I have a rooting interest in certain teams and more, to be honest, in certain people. And I also love the guys at NFL Network that I work for, you know, Daniel Jeremiah and Eisen and Charles Davis. So I root for them as well.
I guess just a question, you know, you mentioned as a GM, what is the draft leading up to the draft? What is that day like as a GM? Is it quiet because you've done all the work, or does the chaos start in the morning as like you start thinking about who might be going where and what moves you might make?
It's interesting because it's a combination of both. And there, you would think it'd be fairly quiet. The work's done. The boards are up. You've talked to all 31 other teams about potential moves. And really, you're in the draft room. You're making sure that everybody's responsibilities for the evening are set up. All the phone lines are good. You've got all your guys checking on all that. You're touching base around the league with some of the GMs that you've talked with earlier just about potential moves. Hey, we talked about coming up. You're still good with that? Or you're still good with going down? I'm good with coming up. Let's talk, you know, so you're kind of confirming those kind of things. You're trying to see what else is banging around the league. I remember one year there were rumors that Aaron Rodgers was going to be traded from Green Bay. It was like 2009, maybe 2019 or 20, I forget. And I knew he wasn't because I had been in touch with the GM from Green Bay, but like, our whole building was just like, oh, what are you doing? Have you talked to him? I'm like, guys, just calm down. I'll call him again. But, you know, he's not going anywhere this year. And, of course, he wasn't. And I had a good laugh with Brian Gutekunst in Green Bay. But there's an awful lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that people really don't know much about.
Yeah, I find it fascinating listening to it from your perspective, Mike. Is it's from a player, obviously I can speak from that perspective. You almost like your future is in the hands of 32 other teams. You don't know where you're going to be drafted. Your life is about to change, and you're excited about it despite where you may go as far as a round. But from a front office perspective, do you guys have the do you get the butterflies in your stomach, right? It's like, I'm wondering, like, is there like you go into a draft and there's a player or a group of players that you want so bad, and you're in a position in the draft that you're not certain that they're going to be there available to you. And I'm just wondering, do you get the same type of nervous energy and butterflies going into the draft?
Very much so, Ike. And, you know, I'm a coach's son. I always thought I was going to go into coaching. And when I went the personnel way, it kind of changed 180 degrees to the point where Super Bowl weekend was not in February. Super Bowl weekend is at the end of April.
Yeah.
And for all the GMs and the scouts and the work that they put in, and I always felt like it was important to fly all your scouts in and let them be in the room when it was happening. Some teams don't do that. But I thought it was important, since it's their Super Bowl, to let them sit in there and just lap up the energy and excitement, and also gave me a chance to just reach over to the area scout and confirm something if I needed to.
Mike Mayock with us. Mike, one more general question. I'm sorry. I feel like we could have you in for 4 hours one day and just ask you questions about this stuff, about the process of it. I think we all find it really fascinating. We hear a lot about players going up boards and down boards, and I imagine a lot of that is sort of people finding out where players are actually ranked as opposed to where the media finds it. But are there ever actually instances that you've seen of a player like actually gaining steam or actually losing steam from anything other than an injury or an off the field thing? Like, can a player fly up boards and go down boards from, you know, from the beginning of this process to the actual draft?
For the most part, if you trust the process and trust your board and trust your scouts and ultimately your coaches also, but at the end of the day, if you stack an intelligent board, I think the teams that draft well, the Baltimore Ravens, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Kansas City Chiefs, Pittsburgh, the teams that have stability at the top and trust their process, there's very little movement. What you mentioned is correct, though. Off the field is constant qualification, and the medical is always amazing to me because I'll give you an example. All 32 teams get the same medical information, but it's interpreted differently. And remember that the starting guard in Kansas City, Trey Smith, they got him in the sixth round. He was like a first-round guy, first or second, and he had a heart problem, okay? And everybody qualified that heart problem all the way up to about the end. And some teams were okay with it. Other teams weren't. The reason he dropped from a one or a two down to six was because all 32 teams were concerned. I had John Gruden poking me in the side from about the fourth round on, like, what about Trey Smith? What? And I couldn't do anything because our doctors said no. Mm-hmm. So the medical and the off-the-field things get qualified right up to the last instance. We had a third-day pick who ended up being a really good player that we moved up our board a little bit late in the process because I got a report from a pro day where a cross-checking scout called me and said, Mike, I think we're a little low on this kid. Will you get your eye on him today? And I watched his tape, and I was like, wow, I think we are a little low. And I ran it down to the defensive back coach and said, I need this in 2 hours. And we got the kid on a Zoom call, and next thing you know, he had moved up. We took him in the fifth round, but he had been a later pick for us, and he just made a whole bunch of money in this last offseason process. So at the end of the day, that's the way the process should work. It should be tape-based, and you follow your process.
All right, Mike, the Eagles sit at 32, an interesting, you know, interesting position for them. Are there a few players that you have, given who the Eagles have drafted the last few years, their needs and what you've seen on tape and knowing what you know about the team, are there a few players that maybe you've dialed in on that you think are most likely for the Eagles to be good picks tonight?
So if they stick and pick at 32, I think philosophically where I'm guessing they are is it's going to be the best defensive player on their board unless there's an offensive unicorn sitting there staring them in the face. In other words, an offensive player they had rated in the top half of the draft somehow was sitting there in the 20s and they either move up to get him or they wait at 32 and for some reason he's still there. But I think it's the best defensive player on the board. I think the logical names for me are at defensive tackle. There are three of them, Derek Harmon, Walter Nolan, and Kenneth Grant. And I think Walter Nolan paired with Jalen Carter would wreak havoc in the NFL. And he's had some off-the-field issues, so he could slide somewhere. I think on the edge, I'd love to see him get Mykel Williams or Shamar Stewart again. That would require one of them sliding a significant way, but their lack of production might cause them to slide. I think Dominic Ezeraku, the edge from BC, is intriguing at 32. I love Malachi Starks, the safety from Georgia, because I think he can play nickel, and that would give Vic Fangio some more flexibility on that back end between Starks and what Cooper DeJean can play in a couple of positions. And Maxwell Hairston, the other corner from Kentucky. I think to me, they're kind of the names I've locked in on. And to be honest with you, all of them could be gone. But I think that would be the high level group, a type of high level group that Howie would be looking at.
Yeah.
Hey, given their assets, like let's say they're not trading players, they're just trading picks. Like, how high do you think they could trade up to, given what they're at 32? You know, is trading to 20, is that realistic, or is it trading up 5 or 6 spots that you think is realistic for them?
I think the two realistic landing zones for them are Minnesota at 24, who only have 4 picks and want to move down, or Washington at 29, only have 5 picks and want to move down. Adam Peters, the GM of Washington, has already said, hey, I have no problem trading with an in-division rival. So I think they're the two logical without starting to give up significant pieces from next year, even though they could, right, because they're going to have so many picks next year. But to use one of the names I gave you a minute ago, if Mikel Williams, who some people have mocked to New Orleans at 9, but if Mikel Williams from Georgia started to slide into the late teens, I think Howie'd be on the phone talking to Minnesota about getting up there and maybe even a little bit further. But if Maxwell Hairston was the last corner in the clump of corners they had in their minds that were first round worthy, would he move up to either 24 or 29 to go get him? To me, another logical possibility. And it wouldn't cost you all that much draft capital to get from 32 to 29 or to 24.
Mike Mayock with us. Mike, how do you, from a quarterback perspective, you know, the Eagles are pretty set there, but for the rest of the draft, how did you look at the top prospects, and are there any of the non-top guys that you saw that impressed you?
I'll tell you what's interesting, guys, and two of these guys have Philadelphia roots. The top three guys, you know, everybody's talked about ad nauseum, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. The next group of, like, four guys, I've heard more intrigue from NFL teams than maybe I ever had on second-day guys. And that would be Jalen Milroe from Alabama, Tyler Shuck, Louisville, McCord, kid from St. Joe's Prep at Syracuse, and Will Howard, kid from Downingtown at Ohio State. I think teams are grinding the hell out of those four kids, and I think you're going to see all four of them go on the second day, maybe three of them in the second round, especially considering that the Giants and Cleveland and potentially New Orleans, all with quarterback needs, probably aren't going that way in round one.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Last question. So we do a thing on the show where I don't watch college football, and where I just sort of what do you do when you study right at the end there? I cram. I watch a lot of YouTube, and I decide who my best players at every position are. And my favorite edge guy in the whole draft, and everybody laughed at me, is Braden Swinson from LSU. What do you think of him? You can laugh at me.
I don't laugh at people.
All right.
You know, I really don't. I've had thousands of people want to know what I think about guys they like, and I think that's cool. Just signifies interest. I think he's a solid player that is probably going to go in the third round, which means he's a really good football, top 100 player. I just don't think he's got the same kind of burst that you're going to see out of the probably 10 or 12 guys who go ahead of him.
I'll take it. He didn't laugh at me like Jack and Ike did. So I'll take it. All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate all the calls leading
up to
the draft.
It's been awesome, brother.
Yeah, it's been great. And I'm sure it'll be Eagle season before we know it. We'll be talking to you again.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, and thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike.
Jordan Mailata joins us. Jordan and his wife are being honored at the Philadelphia Children's Alliance Bear Fair, which is next week. Celebration of healing and hope, supporting the mission to end child sex abuse. We talked about Bear Fair last time you were here, Jordan. Still tickets at bearfair.org, but I know this event has always been really important, and this cause has been very important to you and your wife.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Good to hear from you guys again.
Yeah. What's up, big man?
Appreciate the platform. I just think that this topic is very taboo and not talked about enough. So just bringing, you know, more attention to it to raise awareness, you know, I think that's just something that my wife and I can do as part of the community.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, part of this organization was one of the beneficiaries of the album that you guys did this year. So the event is next Thursday, May 1st. It's at the Constitution Center, and I know our suburban listeners, there's free parking. And anytime our suburban listeners think about driving to the city, I know this. I'm a suburbs
guy
now.
That's important, man.
You start worrying about parking.
That's right.
Yep.
That's important to know. So yep. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Bearfair.org is where you can get your tickets. So, Jordan, you've been in, you were in New Zealand, right? Trying to promote the game. What is it like? Mm-hmm. You know, I've grown up around people who know football my whole life. Mm-hmm. Like, trying to get people who don't really know football to understand what football is all about. Like, what is that like?
I mean, I think you can be a fan and not know anything about a game, and that's exactly what happened. So I was very shocked to see the growth of the game in New Zealand. So many fans. They may not be Eagles fans, but just seeing them, you know, pull up in whatever jersey that they had bought, the team that they support, that was pretty cool to see just the growth of the game, but also having the opportunity to host a flag football camp or clinic down there for kids, just to get, I guess, you know, more interest, pique the interest of kids down there at a young age and let them know that this is a potential path.
Yeah, it's just interesting because it's NFL football is so, American football is so big here.
Yeah.
But worldwide, you know, is soccer and basketball and American football is behind that. It's just, it's so interesting to me to understand that in other countries, they're just starting to really fall in love with American football as, you know, we grew up with it as, it's basically been our American pastime.
Yeah.
Football has been.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing about growing rugby here in the U.S., you know. It's like not common. You don't grow up playing the sport. You don't know a thing about it. You got to do your own research and then you gain interest. But it's sort of the same thing that, you know, we're trying to do back home in Australia and New Zealand, just trying to pique the interest in order to you know, grow or gain the following down there. So it's been pretty fun this off season. Got to go home to Australia and New Zealand for the first time. So pretty cool, pretty honored to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool for us as Eagles fans. Like, you become one of the faces of trying to grow the game outside of the U.S. Obviously, you learning the game and picking it up late. I'm just wondering from your perspective why it's important to you to be able to sort of share the experience of what it's like with American football and, I don't know, answer questions, dispel some myths, things of that nature when going around the globe talking about it. Why has that been, I guess, a passion of yours and intriguing for you?
I think, one, the opportunity, you know, is amazing. We just talk about that in itself. But then, two, for me, trying to prove myself in this league, you know, it's always been, oh, he's the rugby kid, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, he's the rugby kid. You know, I've been trying to, and I still a chip on my shoulder, prove myself every year. You know, when someone brings up my name, I want them to say, oh yeah, he's one of the best tackles in the game. I don't know, rugby will always be a part of me, but that's the chip on my shoulder that I use as motivation to go out there and give everything I have. And so, for me, it's just about why can't we play? Mm-hmm. Why can't we? We deserve this shot too, you know. And so that's kind of why I love, you know, trying to spread the game and keep the growth going down under, just to keep giving kids opportunities to come play this sport. Because anyone can play this sport, man. You just have to have the passion and the drive to be able to do it. And if you get that opportunity, to take hold of it. So that's really why.
Jordan Mailata with us. Now, Jordan, we are 2 days away from the draft. You'll get some new teammates on Thursday. Now, you, what was your experience that weekend like? The Eagles took you in the seventh round. Like, were there other teams that you thought, you know, might be interested? Did you know it was going to be the Eagles? The process of waiting. What do you remember about NFL draft weekend?
I remember everything.
Really?
That call changed my life. You know, that call really did change my life. And I remember getting invited probably a couple of days out before Thursday night, and I just thought, yeah, why not? You know, like, just go down there on day three, just check it out, you know, live it up, take in the sights and sounds. And, you know, went down there on the Saturday, on day two, I believe it was,
went there on day two and ended up getting a tour of the whole facility down at AT&T Stadium. I think that's where it was. And, mate, it was incredible. I had no inclination that I would get drafted. You know, for me, it was just a shot in the dark. If it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, well, it doesn't. You know, I just go back to the training paddock and keep grinding it out till I get an opportunity through the IPP program. And lo and behold, like, I got a call from a Cleveland number, and it ended up being somebody from the Jets, which was hilarious. Just wondering if I was still available, and I was like, "Well, are you watching the same draft I'm watching?" sitting in the back room, I'm sitting there like, "Oh no, he wants me in free agency," is what my agent was telling me. So I was like, "Okay." So I'm sitting there, and I'm just, you know, the picks are going by, round five, round six, start of round seven comes, and I've been sitting in this green room in the back for like, oh, far out, felt like four to five hours. Me and my boy Christian, he was part of the IPP program I was in, and he, you know, he was there for me that day. And sure enough, I get a call from Brandon Brown, who's now the executive GM at the Giants. So he was one of the Eagle Scouts that found me. He was the Eagle Scout that found me.
Okay.
And I answered the phone to Brandon, and, you know, said, "How's it going?" And he said, "Well, you know, I have someone who wants to speak to you here, and his name is Howie Roseman." And so, yeah, I just remember Howie's giddy old self. "Hey, Jordan, we're about to take you in the seventh round, pick 233. And I was just overcome and overwhelmed with emotion. You know, just I couldn't believe that a team was taking a shot at me. You know, no prior football experience. And, yeah, the waterfall started happening, the waterworks, everything. And, yeah, I don't really remember much after the phone call. All right, because I was trying to call my family. I was like, "Some team is crazy enough to take me." And, man, that phone call changed my life, man. So shout out to Brandon Brown for finding me.
Did you have any – so, as you mentioned, you got drafted with no football experience. After the rush of getting selected, was there any, like, self-doubt in, "Wait a minute, now I'm going to have to – learn how to play football"? Like, was there any doubt that you could actually accomplish what was set before you with getting taken?
Yeah, looking back, there was no doubt because I was a cocky young man. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
You are.
I'm allowed to say that word. I am? Okay. Yeah. I apologize, kids, anyone listening. But I was a cocky young man, and I knew I was going to give everything I had, right? And so for me, I was just so excited for the next opportunity that I got, and it was to prove myself. And 8 years later, fire out. Still trying to prove myself. Can you believe that?
Well, I think you've done a pretty good job.
It's great that you keep that as a chip on your shoulder, but I think for the most part, we know who you are.
Yes.
I think you've done a great job of proving yourself. Yeah, so,
it's the right attitude.
Yeah, keep the chip, though.
Yeah, I'm not so sure you're good, actually. You might need to be even better next year. I'm not sold. Yeah.
No, it's all good. I'm just listening to his draft story, man, and it's awesome. And I don't care how many draft stories I've heard in my lifetime. Each one makes you reflect back on your own experience.
For
so
sure,
sitting
of course,
there listening to Jordan talk about his day just takes me back to my own day. So it's no matter when that name is called, no matter what number it is, it's the greatest feeling in the world, man. It is the greatest feeling in the world.
You know, I had no idea what the draft was until 3 months prior to me going to it.
So you probably didn't have all the anxiety that most of us have.
The perfect reaction. That's the craziest part. I was like, "Oh my God."
You now, as you know, you've been here a while now, and you're one of the leaders, one of the sort of like elder statesmen on the team. I assume you look at your own role as a responsibility when these new guys show up. That you're one of the people that shows them what it's done here. Do you think about that as like that it's in part your job to
always.
Do that? Yep.
Always. I always think about it. You know, the leaders that I've had that have been great examples for me always led by action. And so that's all I know how to do. It was a simple recipe. Jason Kelce did it, Lane Johnson does it. Bloody Isaac Seumalo did it. Brandon Brooks did it. You know, those guys, Fletcher Cox, BG, they did it.
They're led by action. They're led by routine. And so for me, it's just that's all it is, showing these kids. It's simple. It's going to ask a lot of you, but the recipe is simple. You don't have to solve X squared plus Y three, you know, power to the three. Like, you don't need to do all that. Yeah. It's a simple recipe, but it's gonna demand a lot from you. So, yeah, I always think about it. Everything I do when I step in that building.
Different position to be in for yourself and your teammates, at least with the exception of maybe four of them this time of the year. Going in as defending champions, I'd be remiss without asking you, where are you at right now mentally, physically? Where are you at in your, I guess, your preparation of getting ready for the season? How you feeling mentally and physically?
Yeah, I'm already ready. Like, we're all excited to be back. But for myself personally, I don't view it as seeing it as defending champions. Last year was last year. Last season was last season. That's done, right? I think that's part of this, what they call the Super Bowl hangover, is with the pressure of feeling like we have to defend the title. And I was honest with Sirianni. I went up to him a couple of weeks before OTAs, and I told him where I was at. And the fact is like, this is a whole new team. There's whole new faces. We should be dealing with this how we dealt in 23. Move on. The quicker we can move on, the better, because it's a whole new team. It's a new goal. What's the goal this year? Win the championship. That's just it for me. Again, I try to keep it as simple as possible, but I've already moved on. You know, I've already moved on. Now,
yeah,
we still got to get that ring ceremony out the way before we can
officially move on. Yeah,
listen, you just listen.
Like, you know, that's like the last chapter in the book. But mentally, for me, I'm already thinking about this season.
Yeah, you just scared the hell out of me, so don't worry. Listen, you're not defending champs anymore. I'm not going to say repeat on any of that.
No, we are moving on.
Yeah, we forgot about it. Like,
it's just a whole new season. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Fans and you guys can do all that. But you're asking me for my approach is this year, and that's just it.
Yep.
My approach is, you know, when we lost that one in 22 and 23, you know, the 2023 one, like, you know, we had to move on right away.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we know how to deal with adversity, how do we deal with success?
I think it's a great mindset. Yeah.
You got to move on. You got to be able to move on, because teams ain't going to wait for you.
That's exactly
teams
right.
Find you a threat. Now, that's their problem. But for us, we know what we're about. We know the goal. We know what it takes to get there. But we have a whole new team, and this is a whole new goal again. We're gonna hit the ground running.
Well, we thank you for your time. Before you know it, it's going to be camp time, brother. Before you know it, it's going to be training camp time. So
I'm going to take it day by day, man.
All right. Nah, okay.
Man, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go.
And again, God bless you and Nikki for being supporters of the Philadelphia Children's Alliance. Again, the Bear Affair is Thursday, May 1st at the Constitution Center. You can get tickets at bearaffair.org. Free parking as well, so you don't have to worry about parking. So thank you again for your time, and we look forward to seeing you back in Philly.
All right, brother.
Thank you, guys.
All right. There he is, Jordan Mailata. As well, the PCA also sells these golden tickets, which are available, and you can get like one person that buys. There's only 100 golden tickets. One person gets an auction item, can win an auction item before the auction even starts. So, and there's Eagles prizes in there as well. So you can get a golden ticket as well at bearaffair.org. It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are 2 days away from the NFL draft, Eagles with the 32nd selection in the first round. We'll have coverage for you all day and then through the draft at night. Joining us now, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, none other than Ross Tucker. Ross, we appreciate you coming back this year.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's great to see you guys. You look all crisp and clean.
Ah, there he is.
I'm always jealous of Ike's voice. Whatever he was just selling, I want to buy it, because his voice is just so good. I'm so jealous.
Oh, look at you buttering us up. It's good to see you too, Ross. You look crisp and clean as well. You know, I have a bone to pick with you, Ross. When we had you on last year for my YouTube big board for offensive linemen, you laughed at my Roger Rosengarten pick, and the guy was awesome. What do you have to say for that?
I'm quite sure I was laughing at whatever it is that you opposed to like what your ranking of him was. I mean, listen, you guys have the audio, you can pull it, but some of your analysis like does a good job of sliding or moving. Like, I just, I think it was that part of it that cracked me up more than what you said about Rosenberg. You're right. He played very, very well for the Ravens. That was a home run pick for them. He is a good athlete, and you identified that because of your basketball background.
Look, I'm not gonna take your backhanded compliments. We appreciate you having us here. After we do the offensive line big board, we are going to want to ask you a couple questions about the draft, if you don't mind, if you've got the time.
Of course.
All right. So I'm going to give you my YouTube offensive line big board for this year. I do three guys. You'll tell me. I'll tell you what I think, and then you tell me what you think. You got it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Number three, Marcus Bowe out of Purdue. So, awesome athlete. Sort of reminds me of an Eagles offensive lineman in that he runs like awesome. The guy, first of all, anyone who is blocking usually ends up on the ground without him holding him. And it looks like he sees the field in the YouTube I was looking at. Like a running back or something. He is looking in the space that he has to create the block for, and he ends up creating a hole that I didn't even see. So not only is he strong and a great athlete, but he seems pretty smart to me. Ross, Marcus Bowe, my number three guy.
You know what? So what I like about it is I like that you identify and find guys that other people aren't talking about that much.
Yep.
Right.
And I like him. I think he's good. He's like one of those guys that I still say, give him a chance at tackle. If it doesn't work out, then you can move him to guard. Now, he's like a lot of guys in this year's class. He falls into the Ross Tucker short arm category, right, with 32-inch arms. So he probably will slide in to be a guard. But that's a guy that, like, if the Eagles took him in the second or third round – and had him compete with Steen, he's got some Steen similarities, probably a better athlete, not as big as Steen, but in that he could probably hold it down for you at tackle, but better suited at guard. I don't even know how to comment on some of your other things you say about Chris Lyman. What else ever say before? I don't know what to say about that. He is a good athlete, yes. I don't even know what you said about the vision, like running back vision. I don't know what that means.
Well, you'll see at the next level. You're a real football guy like me. You'll start seeing at the next level, Ross. All right. Number two. Now, I think this guy, I don't really look at, like, I don't remember where these guys are ranked, but I think this guy is well thought of. My number two guy is Josh Simmons out of the Ohio State University. Ah. He is huge. He's strong. He runs like a tight end. There are a bunch of plays where I saw him, and I just remember this from a lot of Eagles plays with Mailata and then Kelsey and Juergens, is that, like, the running back is 10, 15 yards down the field, and he's keeping up with them, knocking guys over. And the other thing is that, like, he looks like he loves hitting people. Like, he looks like he is attacking the defensive lineman rather than the defensive lineman attacking him. So my number two guy is Josh Simmons out of Ohio State.
So you might not realize it, Spike, but what you just said is really important for an offensive lineman. He looks like he really likes hitting people. I know you people think that every NFL player really likes hitting people. Yes and no, right? Like, there's some guys that really, really enjoy it. I never thought just blocking people was fun. Like, why is that fun? They get to score a touchdown. I'm just like standing in front of this guy. No, like, the fun part is trying to kill the dude, right? Like, the fun part is trying to physically punish him. So you need guys like that. Mailata's like that. Landon's like that. There are teams that don't have a single enforcer, a single bodyguard type at all on their offensive line. And it's problematic. I'm a big Josh Simmons guy. I actually did two of his games, Spike, when he was at San Diego State as a freshman. And I distinctly remember thinking, what is this guy doing at San Diego State? I mean, he's like 6'6", 320, long arms, athletic. He played awesome for Ohio State till he got hurt. If he didn't get hurt, I think he would be the number one tackle in this draft. I think he'd be like a top 5, top 10 pick. So, you know, some other time I'll come on to get your medical evaluation, of your YouTube medical evaluation, but I like the video breakdown.
Well, unfortunately, because of the Sixers, I'm actually pretty good at the medical evaluations as well. All right, my number one guy. Speaking of liking to beat the crap out of guys.
This is your number one O-lineman.
This is my number one O-lineman.
On your big board.
Is Wyatt Millam out of West Virginia. Out of all the offense, yes. Out of all
West Virginia,
yes.
Oh,
out of
God.
All the offensive linemen I watched, this guy beat the crap out of more guys than I saw than I saw anybody else. Pass blocking, he's beating the crap out of guys. Run blocking, he's beating the crap out of guys almost every play. If I was a defender and I had to go up against him, I would be bummed out because I would know it was going to be a long day. I want the Eagles. I want Howie to pay attention. I want this guy in Stoutland U. Number one, Wyatt Millam out of West Virginia.
So, first of all, I thought it was Milam, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know. I'm just looking at the YouTube. I don't know. Milam, Millam, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be Milam. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, so to have him ahead of like Armand Membu from Missouri,
yeah,
who reminds me a lot of a former teammate of mine, Jason Peters, like a lot, or Campbell from LSU is ballsy,
yep,
for sure.
Yeah,
I will say this: I too like Milam. Here's what's interesting about Milam: he was one of the Eagles' 30 visits. They brought him in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they don't do that usually unless they like him as well. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Eagles drafted him. Everything you said about him is correct. He is 6'7", but has 32-inch arms. So that puts him in a really weird spot. He's almost like as much of a T-Rex as me. Short arms. So the question will be, if his arms aren't long enough to play tackle, is he too tall to play guard? You can play guard at 6'7". You know, Harriman's famously did it very well for a long time. But you're going against a bunch of guys that are like 6'1", 6'2", 320. Really, really hard to get leverage on them. I like Milam as a player. I would not have him number one on my Spike Eskin YouTube big board.
Well, we are not the same, Ross. We are not the same. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you you humoring me here. Ross Tucker with us, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Now, you were undrafted. Like on that weekend, was just thinking about at that time, was there ever a possibility you thought you might go? Like, what was that weekend like? What was the process like of you going from college to the pros?
Yeah, so I was such a bottom-of-the-barrel NFL draft prospect. I knew I wasn't going to get drafted.
Okay.
And my agent told me, remember back then, there was no rookie tryout camp like they have now.
Right.
And back then, there was only an 80-man offseason roster, not 90. Okay, it's a big difference. So my agent told me it was 50-50 whether or not I would even get signed. And I'll never forget, my parents had just gotten me a cell phone, my first cell phone for my birthday, okay? This is 2001. So I had my dorm room phone there. I had my cell phone there. The draft was Saturday and Sunday during the first round. By far the worst team in the NFL for the previous decade, the Cincinnati Bengals called me. And I answered the phone, Spike, and I was like, I'm ready to be a Bengal. It was the first round. And it was the assistant offensive line coach saying, hey, Ross, just want to make sure we had the right number for you. We have you ranked as a guy that if you don't get drafted, we might want to sign. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, but I'm ready now. Just so you guys know, I'm ready now. If you want to take me now. So that was pretty funny. That was the only team that called me was the Bengals. They called me Saturday and Sunday. So real quick, my agent told me the longer it takes after the draft for me to call you, the worse of a sign it is. So it's like an hour after the draft and he hasn't called me. So I'm thinking, I just got up at 6 a.m. every morning, second semester. I didn't go out one time. My friends are coming in at 5 a.m. and I'm going to go work out. And it didn't happen. I'm not getting signed by a team. I went out to the fraternity. I couldn't even look my friends in the eye. I had to eat something. That's where you eat. It's called an eating club. It's a long story. I go back. I'm walking up the steps, and I hear the dorm room phone ringing. This is before cell phones. So I run up the steps. I answer it, and my agent's like, "Where were you?" I said, "I was hungry, and I thought I wasn't getting signed. You took an hour and a half." He's like, "Well, congratulations. You're the newest member of the Washington Redskins." So that was my story. I thought I had just wasted months and months of my life, but instead I got a chance and I was able to make the most of it in Washington.
You thinking you were a first round pick is the funniest thing I've heard today. Not that you couldn't have been, but like I can only imagine. You're like, "I don't think I'm gonna get drafted," and then you get called on day one.
Somebody calls you on day one. Holy cow.
I knew they weren't taking me. It's like a half joke. I knew they weren't taking me.
Yeah.
But nobody told me that they might call you earlier.
Right.
To talk to you. So like I got a call from a number, NFL number. I'm like, "This is unbelievable."
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then by the way, they still didn't try to sign me after the draft. They didn't. They signed some other guys. And so I think Washington was like the only team that wanted to give me a chance. And thank goodness for Marty Schottenheimer, because he gave me a real shot.
Well, I tell you, Ross, that's the last time we was broke, man, leading up to that draft.
Yeah. All right, Ross.
Oh, man, that was.
I remember those I remember those workouts in the morning, and you're still grinding. You're saying to yourself, "We're almost there. We're almost there." You know, I made it through my college career. You know, I've done the. I don't know if Ross, you were you got invited down to the combine and all that type of stuff, but you went through that whole process, and you still don't know where your future is going to be at. And you're waiting for this weekend to be told where you're about to start this new life.
Right.
And here's the crazy thing, Ross, right? We all think we're going to play 10-plus years, right? We all think we're going to play 10-plus years when you get drafted.
Yep.
So that's why you're so elated when you do get the phone call. But then reality sets in that you got to go try to make the ball club and everything else. So, but
I would have been absolutely thrilled. We're just making the practice squad.
Exactly. Yes.
Just to play him. That first mini camp, you get like $400. I never cashed the check. To me, it wasn't about that. Now it's like nowadays you can take a picture.
Right. Yes.
Back then, I never cashed it, but I'll never forget this. My roommate was some undrafted O lineman from Northern Iowa named Brad Harms. Shout out Brad Harms. I was such a bottom of the barrel guys, Spike and Ike. I got no signing bonus, zero.
Wow. Okay?
His signing bonus was $5,000.
Yeah.
He opens it up and he's like, "Oh my gosh, taxes! They're terrible. How bad are taxes?" And I'm looking at him like, "Yeah, taxes. They're bad. Yeah, I hate taxes." I had zero. So anyway, he was terrible. They cut him after the first weekend, and I played really well. I was like, "Oh my gosh, I can do this." I call my agent. I said, "Yo, can you get me the $5,000 from the Northern Iowa?" Because I had no money.
Well, the good thing about not getting a signing bonus is you don't pay any taxes on it.
That's
right?
True.
That's the win.
That's the fact.
You won on taxes. All right, Ross. You can get Ross Tucker Football Podcast. We appreciate you coming on, brother.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, my pleasure. Great to talk with you guys. Great to be on in the afternoon for once. Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
Thanks,
yep.
Ross. There he is, Ross Tucker.